Hey, Truth Seekers, listen live to The Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 6 p.m. in the West, 9 p.m. in the East, only on the Progressive Voices Network. Watch the live show video stream at MikeMalloy.com. Can't listen live? Download the podcast at MikeMalloy.com. Don't miss a minute of the fun and frivolity.
You are listening to a classic Mike Malloy Show from the Wayback Machine, so don't call in. Mike will return live faster than you can say Trump crime family.
The hour. Welcome to tonight's program, Mike Malloy Show. How are you? You doing all right? Great. You know, one of the difficult things about going on at the same time Rachel Maddow goes on MSNBC is that she starts right at 9 o'clock and I don't start till 9:07. And so many times, either she or her producers have picked a story that happened for their lead for the program that happens to be the lead for our program. And, of course, there's no comparison here whatsoever. Certainly not comparing myself to Rachel Maddow or to MSNBC. Wouldn't think of it. But, it happened yet again this evening. You know, once again, here I go. So let me just pretend like I didn't see anything that that's on MSNBC these first 6 or 7 minutes. Okay, is that fair enough? Okay, that's fair enough. While the debacle was going on in Wisconsin last night, which, you know, you can read it any way you want to. It really doesn't matter, I don't think. I think the writing is on the wall that people in this country, politically speaking, are pretty much have gone insane. And that's what we want. We want insanity. And by God, that's what we're going to get. But aside from that, there was an issue in California, a ballot proposal that was up yesterday. And it was a proposal to put a $1 a pack increase in cigarette taxes. Now, back in March, when some polling was done, it was discovered that Californians supported this by about a 2-to-1 margin. I think it was like 67% to 33% or something. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, Californians are not heavy smokers. If you want heavy smokers, you know, you go to Chicago, you go anywhere in the South. And believe it or not, you go to New York City too. But, California, you know, the healthy lifestyle, the increase, the dollar a pack increase in cigarette taxes would have gone, guess where? Into a special fund for cancer research. Cancer research. That's it. I don't even know if I could do this. The ballot initiative in favor of this dollar a pack tax on cigarettes was, like I said, leading 2-to-1 for the no tax bit. So it went on the ballot. Well, back in March, the tobacco industry, led by Altria, which is actually Philip Morris, but the tobacco industry, donated close to $50 million into that campaign. Now, everybody's screaming and talking about the outside money that got the little prick in Wisconsin to keep his office. That was $30 million. $50 million was spent by the tobacco industry. How did they spend it? Television commercials. So instead of winning by the margin that was there back in March, 2-to-1, the tobacco tax lost. 50.8% of Californians who voted said no 49.2% said yes. David Veneziano, chief executive of the Oakland-based California Division of the American Cancer Society, said in a phone interview today, quote, it's clear to us that the tobacco industry has confused California voters by leading them to believe that money would be leaving the state. The money would be used for cancer research in California. Now, who is in favor of putting this dollar a pack tax? Take your pick. American Heart Association, American Lung Association, American Cancer, American Cancer Society, a lot of stars and athletes, Lance Armstrong, blah, 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 blah. I can't get my mind around this. I really can't. The money would come only from smokers, and smokers constitute a fairly heavy minority in California. Now, if you want to smoke and you want to take, be responsible for the consequences, lung cancer, throat cancer, mouth cancer, bladder cancer, what else, Kathy? It kills you. It kills 400,000, half a million people a year. If you want to do that, as the tobacco industry has been telling us for half a century now, you must have the freedom to make your own choices. And the tobacco industry will tell you, oh, they never try to hook people. They just try to influence what brand you smoke, which is all garbage. And we all know this. But once you're hooked, see, when you become addicted to nicotine, it is almost impossible to stop. It is easier to break a cocaine habit. It is easier to break a heroin habit. It is easier to break just about any addiction than it is to break a nicotine addiction. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go through all this stuff like the executives from the tobacco companies sitting in front of Congress a couple of years ago saying every one of these filthy rat sons of bitches agreeing that nicotine was not addictive. And that they didn't alter the nicotine content in their poisonous product. Just remember, there are two products, if used absolutely as designed, will kill you. Guns, cigarettes. That's it. You don't have to do anything. Just use it the way it was designed, and it will kill you. But it doesn't matter. It honest to God, it doesn't matter. Reynolds, Americans, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, American Snuff, Santa Fe Natural Tobacco, they all gave $14 million, according to this data research company. Reynolds, based in Winston-Salem, announced in March that it plans to cut 10% of its U.S. workforce by the end of 2014. So, as demands for cigarette wanes, supporters argued the measure would keep children from beginning to smoke, and therefore saved lives. The people in favor of this tax raised $12 million, with $8 million of that coming from the American Cancer Society. New York Mayor Bloomberg, founder and majority owner of Bloomberg News, gave $500,000 to back the measure. Erwin Jacobs, co-founder of San Diego-based Qualcomm, Inc., the biggest maker of mobile phone chips, gave $30,000. The widow of Steve Jobs gave $30,000. Remember, Steve Jobs died of pancreatic cancer. Not that he smoked, but that's another result of smoking. Armstrong's nonprofit cancer charity, Lance Armstrong, gave $1.5 million. But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter anymore. If you have a person intent on destroying the union movement, you have a person intent on making life as miserable as possible for the middle class, the middle class of Wisconsin will support him. If you have a referendum on the ballot in California that does nothing to people who don't smoke, that raises money for cancer research, a buck tax on cigarettes, which would, in California, which would not even bring it close to what the tax is in New York State, I don't think. And from a 2-to-1 support of that tax down to a losing vote. And what happened? The advertising. What happened in Wisconsin? That's what we talked about last night. The advertising. If somebody told you that Jesus Christ was an axe murderer, you'd probably get very offended. But if a group with unlimited funds, like the Koch brothers, decided to run a campaign that said Jesus Christ was an axe murderer, by the time they finished, the Pope would say, I hate to tell everybody this, but Jesus Christ was an axe murderer.
Keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda. Propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. The beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they see with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propaganda.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance. No abuse.
21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tanya in Vallejo, California. Tanya's message, I'm sponsoring an hour each month to tithe at the Church of Malloy. This month I asked listeners to learn about the Cuban Five from any news source you trust. Heroes to the Cuban people. Why are they locked up here? Go to the website, thecuban5.org. All written out, thecuban5.org. Thanks, Tanya. I'll have to check that. I'm not familiar with that one either. This is Church Night. It is Wednesday, where we dedicate part of the program to the crazed sickness that is organized religion, mostly evangelical Christianity and Catholicism. The other brands of religion are just as screwed up and mind-destroying, but those are the two that we're most familiar with here. We do church on Wednesday night because it is in memory of the Wednesday nights in the summertime I used to go to prayer meeting with my grandparents. If you're a regular listener of the program, you've heard that story 8,000 times, so I shan't tell it to you again. But I do have a little piece of sound for you. This is from Brian Fisher. Remember him? He's the American Family Association. This guy is about as much of American Family as a goddamn snake. He said on his radio show yesterday that we have to choose between homosexuality and the First Amendment. I want you to hear what Brian Fisher had to say.
Every advance of the homosexual agenda comes at the expense of religious liberty. The single greatest threat to religious liberty in America today is the homosexual agenda. We cannot have religious liberty. In fact, I would go so far as to say we cannot have gay marriage in the First Amendment. We can't have homosexuality in the First Amendment. If homosexuality is embraced and normalized, that's the end of the First Amendment. It's gone. It's out of here, shredded beyond recognition, a worthless piece of paper. Now, I believe we should be free in America to discriminate against homosexual behavior. Because if we don't, then it will be people of faith who will be discriminated against. It is not possible to have a discrimination-free society. We can't have it. Either we are going to discriminate against homosexual behavior, or we are going to discriminate against Christianity.
Now, this guy has a radio program. And he's with the American Family Association, and he's a goddamn insane religious bigot, completely out of his mind. Do you hear this freak? We can't have gay marriage in the First Amendment. We can't have homosexuality in the First Amendment. If homosexuality is, his word, normalized, that's the end of the First Amendment. And he believes that people in this country should be free to attack homosexual people, beat them up, scream at them, deny them the right to marry, deny them living space, deny them a line in the goddamn grocery store supermarket, deny them everything. This man is a Christian. What would happen to him if he found out how many of the 12 disciples were gay? What would happen to his mind? It would snap like a piece of brittle dog dung. But there he is on his radio program telling people that Americans should have the right to do anything to homosexuals that they want to do. It's either that or the end of Christianity. Well, given the choice, Brian, I'll stand with the queers. Good God, this country is just sick. Sick. Sick out of its mind. Cigarette tax for cancer research? No, 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 no. Recall this little Nazi in Wisconsin? No, 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 no. We want his poisonous policies. We want smokers to continue to die. Allowing somebody on the air who talks like this Brian Fisher pig? Of course! Freedom of speech, Mike! Hold on a minute. Hey, Satan! Yo, it's Malloy! Hey, how you doing? How's Andy? Yeah? You're kidding. Huh. I just wanted to check in and let you know that things are still going to hell in a handbasket here. You're doing great work. You really are, you demon-horned devil, you. Yeah. Yeah, that's you. Andy's growing a tail? Oh, he thought it was, he wanted one like, oh, I see. You got one. He wanted one. I see. All right. Listen, got to go. It's church night. I just thought I'd check in. Hot down there? That's a little joke. See you later, Satan.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tanya in Vallejo, California. She writes, I'm sponsoring an hour each month to tithe at the Church of Malloy. Oh. Well, thank you, Tanya. This month I asked listeners to learn about the Cuban Five from any news source you trust. Here's to the Cuban people. Or heroes to the Cuban people. Why are they locked up here? The website is thecuban5.org. Thecuban5.org. Tell me if if you remember this from the campaign a couple of years ago.
And understand this, if American workers are being denied their right to organize and collectively bargain when I'm in the White House, I'll put on a comfortable pair of shoes myself. I'll walk on that picket line with you as President of the United States of America. Because workers deserve to know that somebody is standing in the court.
Workers deserve to know that somebody is standing in their corner. Well, he did send a tweet. He did tweet his support for the recall. But, you know, there are certain things that a president can and can't do. And one of the things, apparently, that a president cannot do is keep his promise. Oh, well. Now, if the little bit there we played for you from this sick son of a bitch, Brian Fisher, who desperately needs some time in a psychiatrist's office and probably some injections of something. I don't know. Or else all Brian Fisher needs is to make out with a nice, handsome man. And, I mean, really get funky with it, Brian. All you have to do is get a little tongue action going, kissy-kissy, and so on and so forth. And I think that'll relieve... Now, I don't want to insult my listeners who may happen to be gay. I'm just saying. Obviously, Brian has an awful lot of repressed libido in there about gay folk. And since he is a Christian, he can't deal with it. He projects it out and demonizes gay people. Come on. We know what this is. We obviously know what it is. I feel sorry for the gay man who may be having an affair with Brian Fisher right now, because Brian Fisher is such a twit and such a demonic force where it concerns gay folk in this country. But I swear to you that Brian Fisher is a classic example of a man who is being eaten alive with his own inclination toward homosexual sex. He doesn't know what to do with it. He's freaked out. He thinks he'll burn in hell. He thinks his mother will disown him. So he does this. He projects his self-loathing out for the whole world to see. And it's really sad. How many times have we seen this? This is nothing new. But Brian Fisher, if he would just let it go one time, go ahead, Brian. I mean, leave the country, go someplace where nobody knows you, and have a torrid affair with a man. And you will be a changed individual. You will no longer be spouting this self-loathing of yours into the airwaves. Oh, never mind. Here's some more Christian bigotry. A West Virginia-based, I wonder if Bob Kincaid knows about this. There's this kid in West Virginia. His name is Caden Cowger. Not Cowgirl, Caden Cowger, C-O-W-G-E-R. He hosts the twice-weekly radio program, The Caden Cowger Show. And he said the other day that President Obama, quote, is making kids gay, end quote. President Obama is making kids gay. Now, he made these proclamations in a recent broadcast, a video of which was uploaded to his YouTube channel a few days ago. This 14-year-old boy said, quote, homosexuality is a belief. The person is not born that way, no matter what Lady Gaga says. It is a decision, end quote. Now, he has his other claim to fame is that he interviewed former serial woman molester Herman Cain. And, he's proud of himself for that. You know, now, he confessed that he was once friends with some kids who have since come out as gay. And he notes, quote, they were not homosexuals then. They just decided, all of a sudden, I think I'm going to be gay. And then he says, I'm going to tell you this, guys. President Obama, Vice President Biden, they're making kids gay. This young lad who is identified by the new civil rights movement as a Pentecostal Christian, oh, there's a surprise, slams homosexuality as, quote, a perverted belief. It's immoral and not natural. And then he says, now, I'm not for bullying homosexuals. I believe that it's wrong. But when you're trying to teach them the word of God and they consider that bullying, I find that a big problem, not being allowed to convert other people to my religion. That's a big problem for you, you little twit, right? You know, your parent church, the Catholics, got real pissed off over a long period of history. You don't know this, young Caden Calger, because you obviously are not educated at all, as much as a 14-year-old should. But when the Catholic Church decided that they wanted people to convert, they had a very simple dictum, convert or die. You're Jew, convert or die. You're Muslim, convert or die. You practice an old religion, a traditional, convert or die. Well, as a result of that, Caden, millions of people died in a very unpleasant, messy way. The Catholic Church was genius in figuring out ways to torture, mutilate, and then kill people. Which, Caden, 14-year-old Master Caden, is something that you're so close to with your statement. You say, I find that a big problem, not being allowed to convert other people to my religion. Oh, and by the way, on his Facebook page, young Master Calger cites Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck as his influences. But he also says, quote, I make up my own mind. People don't do that for me. I can decide my own beliefs. Now, this isn't the first time that young Master Calger has slammed the Obama administration. He noted that June, quote, is no longer one of my favorite months. I want straight Pride Month. I mean, fair is fair here. This is really... I want to say it's kind of sad, but it's not sad. This is sick. This is poison. 14-year-old kid, and he's very happy because he got to interview somebody who molests women repeatedly. I wonder if one of the women that Herman Cain slid his hand up her dress, if that would have been young Caden Calger's mom. I wonder if Master Calger would have been upset by that or would have found it to be funny. Darn, I wish I had a way to get in touch with him and ask him. Master Calger, how would you feel about Herman Cain sexually molesting your mom? Would you like to interview him then? Would you be so proud of yourself then? How about, as Rush Limbaugh did, what if Rush Limbaugh found out that your mom takes birth control, young Master Calger, and called your mom a slut? And suggested that your mom have sex and videotape it and put it, oh, I don't know, on your YouTube site. How would you handle that, young Master Calger? Wouldn't that be awful? But you see, he's one of your heroes. You declared that. Young Caden Calger has a long way to go, and I'm afraid he's going to get there in a very sad, twisted, sick way. Oh, well. Give me a child till he's 14. I will give you a homophobe for life. Or is that what it said? Give me a child till he's 5, and I'll give you a Catholic for life. That's right. Never mind. Got it confused. All right, we have a break coming here. We shall return. Miles to go before we sleep.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
When all our rights have been taken away. 10 before the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. This hour has been sponsored by Tanya in Vallejo, California, or Vallejo. Tanya writes, I'm sponsoring an hour each month to tithe at the Church of Malloy. This month I ask listeners to learn about the Cuban Five from any news source you trust. Heroes to the Cuban people, why are they locked up here? The website is thecuban5, all spelled out, .org. A West Virginia coal mining activist, and I would be willing to bet that our friend Bob Kincaid knows this this woman, an activist that is against the mountaintop removal, was testifying, was invited to testify June 1st. Her name is Maria Gunnoe, G-U-N-N-O-E. She testified June 1st before the Energy and Mineral Resources Subcommittee under the House Committee on Natural Resources, and she was testifying about the effects of mountaintop removal mining. And she was invited to do so by U.S. Representative Doug Lamborn, a neo-fascist from California, or I'm sorry, Colorado. Now, prior to her presentation, she submitted a photograph to be displayed of a nude 5-year-old little girl in murky orange-colored bathwater. This child was taking a bath. And she was nude, but not where any of her private parts were visible. The photo had been taken by a photojournalist, Katie Falkenberg, as part of a photo essay about mountaintop removal mining. You know where this story is going, don't you? Yeah. Maria Gunnoe, the activist, said, "I was drawn to the photo because I think it really captured what is happening here in West Virginia." So, the U.S. representative, Nazi bastard from Colorado, pulled the photo from the presentation, was very careful not to look at it based on advice from his staffers who deemed it inappropriate. But what did he do with it? He gave it to U.S. Capitol Police. What did they do? They questioned Maria Gunnoe for 45 minutes after the hearing in what a Capitol Police spokeswoman called, quote, a preliminary investigation. The spokeswoman then told the Denver Post that reported this story, no criminal activity was discovered. Now, Joan Mulhern, an attorney and legislative counsel for Earth Justice, who was with Gunnoe at the hearing, accused the Nazi pig bastard representative from Colorado, Doug Lamborn, of intimidating a witness. Attorney Mulhern said, quote, "I thought they just didn't want her to show the picture because they are in denial about water pollution." I mean, this is how bad it's gotten, you see. The little girl who is forced to bathe in God knows what. That's not an issue. The fact that the little girl takes a bath in the nude and a photojournalist captures the moment, that is intimidation. That is the issue. I want to tell you, folks, if you think this system is salvageable, please, you're going to suffocate from lack of oxygen if you don't pull your head out of your ass and realize that it is not salvageable. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Ah. Marie is calling from Colorado. Hello, Marie.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Marie.
Hello. Are we getting feedback here?
I'm sorry?
Are we getting feedback?
I hope not.
Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I'm having a hard time getting the radio to go off.
Getting the radio to go off? Oh,
no.
You're...
I can still hear you over my radio.
Turn the radio off.
I'm trying to. Then I don't know if I've got you. Let's see if this works.
Okay.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
But I can hear myself. So anyway, I'll make my comment and then I'll get off because I want you to get on with the show. I'm clergy.
Wait, Marie.
Oh.
Marie.
Yes.
Hold on a second because we're coming up here on a break. I'm going to put you on hold. And if you don't mind just holding on until we come back after this break. And then I'll take your call and we can chat for as long as you want to. So I hope that'll work, okay? Just stay with me. But I'm going to put you on hold until we get back from this break. All right, that's Marie, and she's clergy. Okay, we will talk with her when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sorry, I would have liked to have talked to her. All right, let's go to your phone calls. Mike is in Salt Lake City listening on XM. Hello, Mike.
Well, how are you, Mike?
Pretty good.
Well, I want to weigh in about that, you know, homophobic nut, the tape that you played.
Oh, yeah, this Brian Fisher.
Brian Fisher. Okay, yeah. I've gotten into, I'm an agnostic, a free-thinking agnostic, and I've gotten into debates both with Mormons, Catholics, Christian evangelicals, Jehovah's Witness on the issue of gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I always throw them this question. The Bible says that God is the creator of all things. It says also in the Bible that, you know, man is created in our image and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to them, if you have such a problem with gays, why did God make them in the first place to be gay?
Well, the answer to a Christian evangelical is he didn't make them that way. They choose the sinful life. They're choosing to spit in God's face.
Well, you see, then their answer is, well, Mike, God gave a man free will, which is a crummy defense, because if you're telling me that God gave you free will, then God is creating a being that can tell God to go jump in the lake and commit all these terrible, you know, immoral acts, as they deem.
You know, Mike, what I have learned from having been brought up in a fundamentalist, not in a fundamentalist family, but having fundamentalists in my family, in my case it was my grandparents, and I didn't have constant exposure to them. But what I have learned from that experience and subsequent experiences as a teenager and adult and so on and so forth, you cannot argue with someone who is a Christer, someone who claims that they are a Christian and they are not. They personify everything that Christ spoke out against with their bigotry and their hatred and their small-mindedness. But what I have found, you cannot get to them. You cannot. They are so immersed in this poison that has been pumped into them since they were children. You can't. And to even attempt is a waste of time. Not only that, it's very frustrating. When I come up against one of these people on any level, I turn around, walk away. It's pointless. It's like telling someone who is a serial killer that they have to stop.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I just enjoy taking on people and showing them how stupid they really are. And there's one thing I want to weigh in. I am so sick and tired of these right-wing people, you know, talking about believing in freedom and liberty, and then that nut says that that the homosexual marriage will take away their religious liberty. Not so. the agenda of the anti-gay people is to force their concept of the traditional nuclear family down your throat and my throat. They are not about liberty. They're about coercion and forcing. They're not about free choice like you and I as agnostics and atheists about. We're about free choice. They're about forcing their ideas down someone else's throat.
Well, that's very true. And my experience has been it's because they are so weak in their beliefs that they have to get everyone else to do it. I will suggest this, though, Mike. You can't argue with somebody who is mentally ill. Someone who is mentally ill, no matter how you try to present evidence that would lead them away from their mental illness, it doesn't work. They are so encapsulated in their mental illness, they will let themselves goddamn die before they give up the mental illness. Now, in a sense, it's not their fault. It's because they are mentally completely deranged. There are drugs to help people get straight, but anyone who has the sickness of religion to the extent that we're talking about here, where like this Brian Fisher, who can go on the radio program and say the horrific things that he says, this guy would willingly lead a pogrom against gay people and cut their heads off. He would have no problem doing it. He would consider himself fighting against the minions of hell. So it's a losing proposition, Mike. And listen, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. I want to move on, though. I appreciate what you had to say. You cannot convince someone who is mentally disturbed that there is a better way to handle what they're dealing with. You can't do it. And to me, people who are deeply religious are deeply, deeply mentally deranged. Just totally deranged. Now, I'm not talking about spirituality. Somebody wants to be spiritual. I consider myself to have that aspect. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about religion. I'm talking about this crazed system that has covered this earth in blood ankle deep. And it will never stop. The wars that we're gearing up for now are purely religious wars. We got Marie back? All right, Marie in Colorado. Okay, hi, Marie.
Here I am. Hi. I was calling because of your rant a little bit earlier, which I thought was just delightful. These folks that are running around refusing to deny LGBT folk their civil rights, their American rights, just nauseate me. And I sort of wanted to reinforce you on your comment about Jesus and his followers. If the statistics then are the same as the statistics now, 1 in 10 pretty much across the biological spectrum are gay.
Mm-hmm.
I've often wondered about Jesus because by the time he was a teenager, he would have been betrothed to someone.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been extremely unlikely in his culture.
Well,
let me
clarify, Marie, my position on this. I believe there is a sexual orientation, let's call it that, spectrum. That way over here on one end, you have people who by choice are exclusively heterosexual. Over here on this end, you have people, I don't mean by choice they're exclusively heterosexual. That's just where they are on the spectrum. They limit themselves to heterosexual experience. Over here on the other side are people who limit themselves exclusively to homosexual experience. Now, there's a continuum between those two extremes where at any given time, any given person can fall anywhere on that continuum. It depends on circumstance. It depends on setting, environment, attitude. I don't deny that there are people who are exclusively heterosexual and exclusively homosexual. To me, that's biology. But there is also that spectrum. And I think anyone can fall on that spectrum at any time. Now, the problem here, I think a lot of people, men, realize that exists. Now, I don't know how they come to that. Maybe they see a man dressed a certain way, and all of a sudden they get some kind of an urge that they can't explain nor handle. Something mm-hmm. that if they experience that by looking at a woman, they would call it, you know, a sexual bump. But they're looking mm-hmm. at a man, and they get mm-hmm. that little sexual bump, and it literally scares the, I mean, it just scares them almost to the point where they're ready to run screaming into the woods.
Well, they're consumed by shame.
Well, you know, that
Kinsey,
too.
The Kinsey report originally said that they did it on an XY graph, mm-hmm. at least the way I had it. I was a sociologist in another life, and I went to a conference in the 80s in which there was this XY graph, and people can be all over the place at different times in their life, just as you said. The fellow who presented this initially drew a line straight out between the graphs, and we all said, well, what's that? And he said, that's a teenager when everything turns you on, and you don't know why.
Hey, Marie, I got to do another break. Let me put you on hold. Your conversation's very interesting, and your point of view is very interesting. Just let me put you on hold, and I'll come back after this break. I'm glad you got off the Bluetooth. Stay with us. We'll talk with Marie when we come back. I'm Mike Malone. I want to find out. She's a woman of the cloth. I want to find out what that means.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Marie, who is driving in Colorado. All right, Marie, I forget where you were, but thanks for holding on again.
No problem. Where we were talking about the range
of... Oh, right, sexuality, the range of sexuality,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the varieties. I mean, that's the last I heard. Sociologists are now saying that, and psychologists are now saying there may be 14 separate categories of human sexuality. And again, like you said, circumstance, time, all kinds of things can impact that. And that makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the imperative to sexual activity is I think it's in the top two or three of the driving forces in the human species. Food, a survival mechanism. And I think it's ingrained on a very essential level. I don't believe that sexual activity is exclusively procreative. It may have had its origins there in a procreative drive, but once human beings became a little bit more sophisticated and understood that they had buttons that could be pushed that would result in an awful lot of pleasure, I think they realized, okay, I don't have to only do this if I want to get my genetic material into another generation. Or maybe the genetic material was talking to the human. Who knows? Now, yeah. I wanted to ask you, you are a minister?
I'm a practicing pastor.
And can I ask your denomination?
I'm a United Methodist.
United Methodist. Oh, my goodness. I was...
But I have to tell you, I listen to you every Wednesday night religiously, and I use that word intentionally, because I also went to prayer meeting at a little Baptist church every Wednesday night. So I absolutely understand what you're talking about when you do the intro to the segment. Now, you were going to say something about you. I'm sorry.
No, no problem. I just when I was a teenager, I was a member of the United Methodist Church. As a matter of fact, I was the, for about 18 months, was the president of the youth fellowship of that church. small world, eh, Marie?
It is. You and Tom Hartman.
Hartman?
Hartman, that's his background, too. We've had
United Methodist, right.
Right. Yeah, we've had a similar conversation before. Mm-hmm.
Well, I loved my grandmother and my grandfather. They were Italian immigrants. They were not Catholic. They switched mm-hmm. in order to assimilate. Mm-hmm. But and their religious beliefs didn't bother me as a child because I was a child and I didn't fully comprehend what they were about. Had I fully comprehended that kind of fundamentalist Southern Baptist style Christianity, probably would have scared me. Now, my grandmother did a couple of times scare me about her messages where it concerned hell, and I had to be saved. I don't know how you say to a 6 or 7 or 8 year old, if you don't get saved, you're going to burn in hell forever. So what I did as a child, I guess, was just block that out. I would, spend time with my grandmother and her huge gardener and helping her can peas or pick apples and turn it into apple butter or just play checkers with her. But she did spend a lot of time reading the Bible to me and having me memorize Bible verses. That's why it's very difficult, if not, I don't think it's possible for any fundamentalist to call this program and out Bible me, because I just, I have that in my background, like I'm sure you do. So, I'm glad that you tune in every Wednesday night, Marie. I'll try to watch my language.
No, God's heard it all. I mean, what are we worrying about? No, I'm kidding, but I think sometimes an appropriate curse word, and I know Kathy's listening to this, but sometimes an appropriate curse word can get a lot across. And when we talk about the hell that we're putting people through now, the hell that we're turning our society into, you have to damn it. Mm-hmm. You can't sit there and just use milquetoast language. This is an abomination, what we're doing now, and it has to be called that, and called that frequently.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, Marie. Thanks for checking
in. Thank
you. I appreciate your call. Hope to hear from you again. Take care.
Okay.
And drive safe. We have another break coming here momentarily, so we will probably do that before we take another phone call. Email here from Bruce in California. Your story about the little girl in the orange bathwater, the photo, makes me want to puke. The thought that the child must endure such a thing is sickening, orange bathwater. But so is the reaction of the legislator. If that standard were followed, the most important picture of the Vietnam War would never have been seen. Little Kim Phuc screaming in pain from burning napalm, generously provided by U.S. taxpayers, that was melting her skin as she ran. Maybe this legislator got a thrill from that, too. After all, she was a naked little girl. Will it ever end? Bruce in California.
I'm with the God Squad. I'll tell you what. Jesus Christ is gonna kick your butt. I'm with the God Squad. Grab your gun. I'm coming to you live from Armageddon. Don't need to be teaching no biology. You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad, there's no place to...
Defining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. One more little item here before we go back to your calls. You gotta wonder. You don't have to wonder. You know what Bill Clinton is about. But the Obama spokesperson Jay Carney is insisting now that President Obama will not extend the Bush-era tax cuts for wealthier Americans, even temporarily. The reason this came up Bill Clinton has caused a super political headache for the Obama administration, and all the Republicans jumped on this Republican leadership like, the cannibalistic pigs that they are. But Clinton suggested in an interview with CNBC, I think, that tax cuts for people of all incomes, including the uber wealthy like him, should be extended into 2013 to avoid what he called economic harm and to allow time for a broader fiscal deal. You know, Bill Clinton, like Barack Obama, I think, is, taking some kind of weird drug that interferes with their thought processes. I don't know if they're addicted to it. I don't know if they do it for sport. But for either one of these two prominent Democrats to think that they are going to get cooperation on any level from any Republican about anything, I realize Bill Clinton, in his desperate search for a father, has kind of latched on like a lamprey onto old Pappy Bush. And I'm sure that old Pappy Bush was more than happy to play daddy to Bill Clinton. I just wish Clinton would work this stuff out, or had worked it out, on a psychologist's couch before he ran for president. Certainly before he started sucking up to this sour George Herbert Walker Bush. But here you have Obama and Clinton, neither one of whom had fathers who did anything for them or with them except abandon them. And I think this, Bush on the Couch was a very interesting book, analyzing a dry drunk and all of his insane, petulant, OCD kind of behavior, up to and including committing war crimes, unlike anything since the crimes we committed in Vietnam. But what about Clinton? What about Obama? So here we have these two prominent Democrats, one a president, one a former president, pretending like they can get some kind of an agreement with Republicans. The only agreement that Clinton got with Republicans are the agreements that the Republicans want. All that talk about triangulation, that Bill Clinton wanted to do this or do that, so he snookered the Republicans into doing this or that, is so much hogwash. All Clinton did was follow the Republican agenda when he was in office. And how did they pay him back? By impeaching him. Putting him on trial. And of course, Clinton gets the last laugh. His wife winds up Secretary of State, and Bill Clinton winds up a multi millionaire. Plus, he never, I don't think he ever apologized. He took on a lot of responsibility. He had a spiritual guide, a couple of guys who worked him over after it became public knowledge that he was boinking. Well, he wasn't even boinking her, that he was getting involved in oral sex with Monica. But I'm going far afield here, aren't I? Clinton and Obama both think that they can cut deals with Republicans. And Clinton, he's always saying that. In this particular instance, he said, let the tax cuts stay for another year to allow time for a broader fiscal deal. With who? Or with whom? What are you talking about, Bill? Are you talking about people like John Boehner? Are you talking about people like Eric Cantor? Are you talking about what's his name from Wisconsin, the head of the budget committee? You are going to, or Obama's going to cut a deal with him? You're not serious, Bill, are you? Bill Clinton's serious about one thing. How does it affect Bill Clinton? That's it. But tax cuts for people of all incomes are due to expire at the end of this year. Isn't that going to be fun to watch? Watch with these pig, filthy Republicans how they spin that argument. Watch the millions upon millions upon tens of millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars that will be spent to convince unemployed, working poor, lower middle class, people who are struggling, that the tax cuts belong to the wealthy. And then watch the American people in those economic groups I just mentioned agree. It's so twisted, so perverse, and so sick. But Bill Clinton, ought to sit down and shut up. He misses that big stage. You notice how he's just kind of muscling in on the Obama administration. Clinton is such an egomaniacal sucker. The planet isn't big enough for him to play on. I mean, there's all kinds of places he can go with this initiative and that initiative. You know, he and Pappy Bush can get this little private circle jerk going where they're working for this organization and that organization and blah, 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 blah. Pappy Bush has about as much presence right now as a snap bean. You know, Pappy Bush is about 90% of the way into senility anyway. And Clinton just, you know, oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, well, George and I, you know, we're doing this and we're doing that. And Hillary's over there trying to get the North Vietnamese. We don't call them that anymore, do we? No, trying to get the Vietnamese to open up another another Hugo Boss factory over there. Did you know Hugo Boss designed all the Nazi SS uniforms? I just found that out the other day. My God. So, back to your calls. We have an open line here if you want to join in. Alan is in Philadelphia listening on Sirius. Hello, Alan.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
You think they were doing shrooms together?
Now who?
You said Obama and Clinton were probably doing some drugs.
I meant more of a narcotic style. If either one of them really got into psilocybin or peyote or lysergic acid or whatever, it would be a wonderful new beginning for at least for America, maybe for the whole planet. No, they would never do that kind of drug. They would be terrified to do that kind of drug. When I talk about they must have done drugs together, I'm talking about, I don't know. What was Rush Limbaugh's drug of choice? Not Vicodin, but what's the other one?
Percocet was he?
No.
Ativan?
Oxycontin.
Oh, Oxycontin.
Yeah.
All right, his back probably hurt. You know, I'll never forget how every Sunday President Clinton went into prayer. Do you remember those days?
I do.
Prayer and counseling.
Yeah, prayer and counseling so that he keep his fly zipped up. I mean, how about that, right? I need to have prayer and counseling or, you know, it's just going to unzip itself and I'll get in all kind of trouble. So I'm going to go have some prayer and counseling here.
Well, I wanted to discuss Cardinal Dolan, but the gentleman, a couple of calls ago, you had a gentleman who identified himself as an agnostic. I always thought agnostics are really atheists. But they're still a little afraid and are hedging their bet.
Well, I guess that's one way to look at it. I would say agnostic has kind of a small c Catholic meaning, if you know what I mean. It's a broad spectrum word. You can be agnostic about anything. In a religious context, I think what people who have thought it through, I forget who the philosopher was who said, look, you know, there probably is no God, but if there isn't, it doesn't matter. If there is, hedge your bets a little bit and be agnostic.
So, yeah, right.
So that if you do have to confront some hairy thunderer, after you step off this mortal coil, at least you can say, well, it's not that I really didn't believe, I just didn't know what to believe.
Well, myself, I've been an atheist for so many years. I've always considered the concept of God nebulous, based on assumption and subjective thinking.
excuse me. If you're seeking a higher power, whatever higher power you are going to expose yourself to is a higher power that you develop within your own consciousness. And it's all sort of phantasmagorical anyway. So, I had a friend one time who was, I don't know, he was into some kind of cult nonsense, but he used to have a little chant that started out by saying, I am my higher self. I am the power within. And he would repeat that over and over. Of course, he committed suicide around age 35, but I think that's because he was screwed up to begin with, you know.
Well, I wanted to discuss Cardinal Dolan.
Well, hold on a second. Let me put you on hold because I got to do a break here. We'll come back and chat. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Ten before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Back to Alan in Philadelphia, listening on Sirius. All right, you want to talk about this hypocritical Cardinal Dolan and his payouts to priests rather than turning them over to authorities for child rape?
Yes, I wanted to discuss that, but first I wanted to tell you that I'm calling you and the truth seekers from a locked room surreptitiously, because if my wife knew that I was calling you, she doesn't feel it's appropriate for a 60-year-old man at 11 o'clock to call talk shows.
Well, now, wait a minute. Do you have anything to say about it?
Not if I know better.
I see. Okay, all right. Well, you know, whatever works, right? You know what?
Compromise. Well,
sure.
I can say for the young truth seekers of relationships, compromise.
There you go.
Yeah, I was very upset that this Cardinal Dolan, for people who don't know, he paid off in two, I don't know exactly the year, when he was a bishop in Milwaukee, he was paying in two payments, $10,000 each, to get priests off of payroll, and he also gave them health benefits. But he's rationalizing it as charity.
Yeah,
I just don't understand this. It's outrageous.
You know, if Jesus were to hear that and come back, he would come up to Cardinal Dolan, rip his head off, throw it into hell for Satan and the demons and Andy to play soccer with. I mean, for Dolan to do that, and he's a cardinal now. He's one of the princes of the church. I mean, this is astonishing. And knowing, I assume he knows that Jesus is essential. One of the essential messages was suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Now, yeah, he was speaking allegorically, but how far does the allegory go? If Jesus were to find out that Dolan was covering up for and paying off child rapists, I think Jesus would come back and murder Cardinal Dolan, cut him into little tiny pieces and feed him to the fishes.
Well, I don't know if there's a statute of limitations or whether this would be considered an accessory or a cover-up. I don't know why this isn't pursued.
Because people are terrified of the church. Look, why do Republicans...
We're not.
Well, no, but why do Republicans, let me rephrase it, why do middle class and below, people are struggling to make a living, the working poor, workers, unemployed, why do they vote Republican? The answer is the same as why Catholics do not get some tar and feathers and ropes and torches and go after these men who are raping their children. Whatever the reason is, it's the same. I don't know what it is. To me, you have to be deranged to vote Republican. To me, you have to be deranged, if not to be religious, certainly to be part of Catholicism, where the priesthood is raping children and has been for centuries.
Right, and the hypocrisy is so the hypocrisy is so glaring. They're going after the nuns because they're claiming there that the priests are the moral paradigm.
Right.
It's just so hypocritical, Mike.
I hear you, Alan. Listen, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate what you had to say. You speak the truth. Yeah, the hypocrisy, I guess, the murderous hypocrisy, the brutal hypocrisy, the blood-drenched hypocrisy. And you know, this didn't start with Boston Globe's investigation 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, this has been going on for millennia, certainly for centuries. But I cannot comprehend a Catholic church or a Catholic priesthood in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th century that wasn't buggering little boys then. Now, maybe not quite as much now, because back then, of course, they could have sex with women. They could be married. but at some point, where it made that hard right turn into pedophilia and then the cover-up, while at the same time they're burning women alive who happen to be village healers, and they're chopping the heads off of Jews and Muslims, and they're eviscerating anybody they can get their hands on who won't bow down. And man, don't talk to me about the Catholic Church. I get kind of carried away. You know what I'm saying? Eddie is in Garland, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hello, Eddie.
How are you, Mike?
I'm all right.
Hey, man, I'm the zombified guy. You remember me?
Zombified?
Yeah, I made that one comment a while back.
Okay.
Okay, well, whatever. But I got a couple of points I want to touch on.
Yeah, I do remember now from Garland, Texas. Yes,
yeah,
sir. I do.
Okay, yeah. Cool, good, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to call in the other night, but I couldn't get in, and you were going off about the police state and all that stuff. And,
right.
You know, it's just nuts. And so it kind of ties into what I want to say, but I heard a couple of things while I'm waiting on the phone, so I want to touch on those.
Hey, Eddie, let me put you on hold. Here I go again. I've done this about three times tonight, taking a phone call 10 seconds away from having to take a break. And we've got to take a break here momentarily. So let me put you on hold, and I'll come back to you, Eddie, as soon as we get past the top of the hour, if that's okay. If you're on hold, we will get your call when we come back. Stick around. If you're not on hold and you want to join in the discussion, the number is 877-996-2556. So go ahead and give us a holler. All right. Stay with us. Don't go away. Eddie, you're next. Seven past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We have our nightly missive from Prairie 2 coming up here. Not nightly, but our periodic missive from Prairie 2 coming up here momentarily. But Eddie in Garland, Texas has called in. All right, Eddie, thanks for holding on, man.
Sure, man, no problem. So, by the way, I wanted to confirm what you said about religion and all that. I know it's probably church night, right?
It is church night, yes.
Okay, yeah. So I've always believed in myself, you know. I don't really get into all that other stuff. I kind of agreed with the agnostic dude, and that's why I called, was because it sort of ties into the right wing. You know, they promote these religious morals that most of them don't follow, except to make themselves look better in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's amazing to me how, and I'm not saying the left's any better, you know, it's all a 2-1 party system, you know?
Right.
So, but my problem is that, you know, it's always the conservatives that talk about smaller government. And they're talking about smaller government, but when it comes time to get on an airplane, they're the biggest government you could have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, ever since, you know, Bush was in office, it's pretty much been fear, be afraid, we're going to protect you, but then they remove one right after another.
Right.
You know, and this religion fervor, it kind of supports that. I mean, I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm only 30-something years old, but back in the early 90s, weren't people getting in a hullabaloo about the commandments being up in the courthouses?
Oh, yeah, and that's coming back again. You know, this effort to Christianize this country and our public school system and our public spaces is back with a vengeance. It's happening again.
Right. And I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know, any of my fellow Americans, you know, believing in what religion they want, whatever. But,
you know, in government, I think it's a bad idea.
Well, yeah, you know, I said back then, if you insist on having the Ten Commandments where you can see it, have it tattooed on the inside of your eyeballs, or have it written on the, you know, tattooed in, on your inner arm, or put it out on your front lawn, or put it in your bathroom over the toilet, put it in the kitchen over the stove. Just keep it the hell off of public property. Because if you believe it and you want to get these Ten Commandments, I think eight of which are all about kissing God's butt. If that's what you want to do, do it. But why in the hell should I have to look at your insanity 24/7? Do it on your front yard. Do it in your basement. Do it in your attic. I mean, come on.
Well, also, I want to pick your brain about the Constitution. Now, I know you're a very intelligent person, so let me ask you this. You know your stuff. So, when the Constitution was written, a lot of these right-wing people like to argue that it was written based on religion or God or whatever. The only reference to God is in the year of our Lord. Am I correct? Or is that the Declaration?
Look, the framers were, I think they were deists. They were not atheists.
Right.
They were not necessarily agnostic. There is such a thing. I think it's called the Jeffersonian Bible, where Thomas Jefferson had scholars or somebody remove every single reference from the Bible of Jesus or God. I think I've got this right. I don't pay this much attention to it. But the Jefferson Bible just absolutely gutted this idea. And plus, I think it was 1791, there was a treaty that was signed in Tripoli between the United States and the government of Tripoli in order to stop the Barbary Coast pirates from attacking merchant ships. And in that treaty, it was stated categorically, the United States is not by any means a Christian nation. And that's still there in a treaty. So, I don't know how, to me, people who shove their religion at you are doing it because they are so insecure. They don't believe it themselves. And it's that old safety and number thing. If I can get other people to believe this, maybe I can disappear and this God I've invented won't find me and rip my head off.
Right. I don't disagree at all with any of that. I also I don't disagree with my fellows, you know, brothers and sisters happen to believe in something, but I don't understand why it's so hard to believe in oneself.
Well, I don't either. If you don't have that belief in self, and I think we could refer to it as self-respect, how in the hell are you going to respect other people? Look, to me, the whole concept of God, small g, is my respect for, and I'm speaking in general terms now. I don't mean I am awash in respect right now, because I'm not, but my respect for my fellow human being, my willingness to do something for my a fellow human, and not just ones I know, to live consciously so that what I'm doing here is not adversely affecting somebody over there, wherever over there is. And I think if one works toward that kind of conscious, mindful living with respect for where we are and what we're involved in, that to me represents all the God that I need. You know, I'm not afraid of eternity. I'm not afraid of death, for Christ's sake. I mean, I was dead for all of eternity. I have this brief flash of consciousness that I call my life, and then I go back to the void. It's madness to sit around and say, oh, no, I'm going to burn in a lake of fire. Oh, hog crap. You know, the whole thing is just madness. Eddie, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I was trying to explain this the other night, believe it or not, to my almost 8-year-old, who within the past year, she's reached that age of enlightenment, age of reason, I should say. You know, it happens around 7 or 8, the age of reason. And one of Molly's big questions is death. I may have mentioned this on the program. And I think she's the only one of my children who ever really, absolutely brought it up. And the way it started was one night when she was in bed and I was reading to her. Kathy was in the studio, and I thought she was falling asleep. And all of a sudden, she sat bolt upright in bed, and she said, "Daddy, I don't want to die." Whoa! Now, how do you... So it was a real curveball for me. And, you know, I did the typical parent thing, trying to calm her down a little bit and say, you know, we'll talk about this. There's a blah, 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 blah. We'll do this with that. I forget exactly what I said, but it's been an ongoing, not every night, not even every 20th night. But it is an issue that Molly is trying to reconcile. I think I didn't confront this that I'm aware of until I was an early teenager. But so here it is. Now, the only thing I can think of, why Molly now? She is a voracious reader. I've never seen a kid read the way this kid reads. She reads a lot of fantasy stories, a lot of, the spectrum of things that she reads is astonishing. My other kids didn't do this. Molly is a reader, and I think one of the reasons is because Kathy started reading to Molly when Molly was a week old and always did read to her. Kathy read to her every single night when she was just a blob of new baby. And so you know, Molly has discovered all this stuff that normally you wouldn't think a kid would be exposed to. They're certainly not going to get it on television, a kid television programming. But I'm getting way off the track here. But trying to explain to a child about your existence is this brief flash of consciousness prior to your birth was eternity. Post your death is eternity. Twenty-two past the hour. From Captain Mary in Memphis, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Terry Pratchett's writing a book, Small Gods. Captain Mary in Memphis writes, "My religious philosophy is close to that of Terry Pratchett's didactylos, or two fingers for the unlettered didactylos. His philosophy was a mixture of three famous schools, the Cynics, the Stoics, and the Epicureans. And he summed up all three in his famous phrase, to wit, 'You can't trust any bugger further than you can throw him, and there's nothing you can do about it, so let's have a drink. Mine's a double if you're buying, thank you, and a packet of nuts.' Cheers, Captain Marion Memphis." Didactylos also suggested things just happen. What the hell? God, I haven't, Captain Mary, I'd completely forgotten about that. All right, enough fun and frivolity here. If you're on hold, stay right there. Stay there. But I want to get Prairie 2 in here very quickly. Under the subject line, a billionaire can buy anything he wants. In exit polling done Tuesday during the Wisconsin recall, 18% of those who voted for the hard-right Republican Walker said they will vote for Obama in the fall. How can this be? It seems $60 million in a relatively small state can really get your lies, I mean your message, across. One of the most popular ads run by the Republicans pounded on the idea that it was wrong to recall a governor who hasn't committed a crime. A bold ad, or perhaps a Freudian slip, as he's likely to be indicted any day, especially since 12 of his closest aides are already cooling their heels in jail. The premise of this ad was accepted by 25% of registered Democrats. Republicans simply don't care if he's committed a crime. His billionaire masters purchased him an image as a bold, brave governor who took on the difficult issues and balanced a budget that was $3.5 billion in the hole, all without cutting any jobs or raising taxes. He really inherited a $40 million surplus that he gave away to corporations on the first day. The rest was also a bunch of lies. Jobs will be slashed. Taxes will skyrocket. Billions in debt is being kicked down the road while paying interest. But he was able to sell it as day for night. Rural voters who really turned out for him are now convinced that the greedy teachers all make $75,000 a year. Only about a 250% exaggeration. Next winter, the roads probably won't be plowed. Normally a big problem in the Great White North, but global warming should take care of that, courtesy of the Koch brothers. Even people who should know better accepted this nonsense, with 35% of union households voting for their own throats to be cut. In the next few weeks, the disaster Walker has made will start to impact locally. He was only the third governor in 230 years to face a recall. He might be the fourth as well. Okay, jail is more likely. On that point, ironically, the recall gave him a huge gift. Not only was his indictment put off until this Friday, a well-placed rumor, but he is now able to transfer millions of campaign money to his legal defense fund. He can also buy counsel for his already indicted co-conspirators, making it harder to flip them to state's evidence. The Democrats did pick up one recalled Senate seat to gain the majority, so Walker's agenda will be pulled up short. Now he can blame them for the damage he's caused. The right-wing media has become obsessed with the so-called feud between Obama and Clinton. They take no notice that Big Dog Clinton is being pulled up tight on his chain by Obama. The media said that yesterday in an interview on CNBC, Clinton called for an extension of the Bush tax cuts for the rich, contrary to Obama policy. Here's the quote. Here's the quote that they based this on. Try to find the words tax cuts. Quote, "I don't have any problem with extending all of it now, including the current spending level," Clinton said in an interview with Bartiromo. "They're still pretty low, the government spending levels, but I think they look high because there's a recession. So the taxes look lower than they really would be if we had 2.5-3% growth. And the spending is higher than it would be if we had 2.5-3% growth because there are so many people getting food stamps, so many people getting unemployment, so many people on Medicaid. We have the best liberal media that right-wing billionaire money can buy."
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, Carl is calling from Nashville, Tennessee, listening online. Hello, Carl.
Hello, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am doing just fine, calling behind enemy lines here in good old Red, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
I've been on hold for a while, and I've enjoyed the monologue. And you touched a lot of bases, so let me walk up behind those bases. One, Bill Clinton, I mean, listen, he's a moderate Republican, always have been. He's a, you know, he would be a Republican 10, 15 years ago, and that's what he is. He don't like Obama. You know, it's all politics. He knows he want his wife and his name to continue in politics, then he has to, you know, at least look like he's playing, at least wear the same jersey of the team. But he's right up there with Harold Ford Jr., those guys, Ed Rendell, these are all Hillary Clinton people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he put on a good face, he wears the team jersey, but he's nips at Obama every chance he gets, just like Rendell and Ford Jr., those guys. So that's you know, I expect that. So I'm never surprised when he come out and do some things like he, you know, sterling career about his business, about Romney's business and things like that. So I'm not surprised. Two, you were talking about our glorious founding fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a black person in America, I'm conflicted with our wonderful founding fathers, because if you people gloat and go on about how these were great men and they were just to me, as a black person in this country, I feel they were cowards. And the reason why I call them that, they owned other people. You know, they're starting this union and they have all this stuff about freedom and liberty and free men and this, that, and other.
Mm-hmm.
Owned other men, women, and children.
Well, you know, let me ask them, Carl. Why would you be conflicted? It was very clear from the start that they were only talking about white males.
White males that owned.
Right. So basically,
you can touch back. You can touch the. How can I say this? You can point a line from today
mm-hmm.
all the way to 1776, the trickery of the rich privileged
mm-hmm.
over the poor unprivileged
mm-hmm.
whites in this country. And for whatever reason, the poor unprivileged white people in this country have always sided with the rich white people, and that has never really had their best interests at heart. And, mm-hmm. and it hasn't stopped. This hasn't started just in the past few years. This is something that has been going on for the history of this country. And if you look, the guys that are most proud and most patriotic are the poor white guy that would die for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It is an amazing.
You know,
thing.
The only thing I can think of I think it's described as tribalism. You will stick with your tribe even you know against the other. And for example, two of the most heavily decorated combat units in World War II was one that was all African American and one that was all Japanese American. Now think about that for a second. You know, two of the most decorated combat operations in World War II. Now, when those black soldiers came home, once they hit Hosea Williams, before he died, was a good friend of mine. Once he got to Savannah, this guy came back as a wounded veteran. He was a sergeant. He was in the Battle of the Bulge. When he came back and got on that train to try to go from Savannah back home to Atlanta, he was treated like, I can't say the N-word, but he was treated like that. And this is a guy who had fought for America. Now, the same time, Japanese Americans who wound up, I think it was called the Nisei Division or whatever it was called, but they wound up, just like the African American units, with the most decorations for bravery under fire. Now, But white America looked at them as traitors. White America looked at those black soldiers as cowards. So I, you know, I can't, I can never get my mind around that except to say, Carl, it's tribalism.
It really is. I tend to agree with you on that. But at some point, you would think that they will say, you know, we haven't got our 40 acres of trickle down that Ronald Reagan promised us,
right.
and we're pissed off, and we're not gonna go for this anymore. But they continuously vote these guys in and vote against their self interest. I watch it. Give you an example here in Nashville. There's a city called Spring Hill, which is about 25 minutes from Nashville.
Right.
That people in that county would not vote for President Obama under no circumstances. But if it wasn't for President Obama helping to save GM, the Spring Hill plant
right.
that closed in 2009, it reopened Monday morning.
Right.
Amazing. Absolutely stunning. These people would not vote for President Barack Obama in November. Yet, if it wasn't for his policies, if left up to Willard Mitt Romney, that plant would have stayed belly up. It opened back up Monday. It's an amazing thing. I can't wrap my head around it.
Don't try, because I've tried to do that, and it will make you crazy. I'm telling you, Carl, you will wind up, you know, looking around the house saying, where'd I put my liquor?
It's amazing. I mean, these people are back to work. As of this Monday morning, Spring Hill plant.
Well, sure.
GM plant reopened. Brand new, remodeled, everything.
But people I'm not voting for Barack Obama. I'm not voting for him. Hell no.
Yep. Have a good evening, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Carl. I appreciate what you had to say. It's just crazy. And it would be funny if it weren't so tragic. Just tragic. Well, these statistics that Prairie 2 sent me, that 35% of union households in Wisconsin voted to keep this miserable little prick as governor. I mean, wow. and a Reagan Democrat. What in the hell was a Reagan Democrat? You know, and they only became Reagan Democrats, first of all, because of advertising. I mean, they had their perfect evangelical president in Jimmy Carter. Sunday school teacher. Only Carter did his religion. You know, he didn't smack you upside your head with his Christianity. He got out and built houses for poor people. I mean, damn. Plus, on top of all that, you know, he was in the Navy. He was a naval officer. Worked on Hyman Rickover, the father of the nuclear submarine, was a mentor to Jimmy Carter. Yeah, Carter was all about nuking the Russians. I mean, here was a guy who was not a peacenik, and he was a Christian evangelical, and the Christian evangelicals in the right wing in this country just demonized him. Why? I mean, he even talked like a Georgia cracker. Why? Why did they do that? But they went for slick old Ronald Reagan, a spy in the goddamn FBI. I mean, he was a spy in the Screen Actors Guild. I'm a member now of SAG-AFTRA, Screen Actors Guild. Ronald Reagan used to be the president of my damn union. And he was a spy. And nobody likes a rat who, you know, when I was a kid growing up, if there was one thing you better not be, it was a rat. What was a rat? It was somebody who tattled, somebody who said something, somebody who went to the bosses or went to whoever had the power and said, yep, 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 yep. Once they found out you were a rat, that was it. Ronald Reagan was a rat. And yet these Democrats, these white Democrats, just went for him. They went for him like a dog rolling around in cat droppings. I've never seen anything like it. A complete rat. And all these Democrats said, no, I'll vote for him. I'll vote for him. Yeah, I saw him on the TV. I saw him on television for years with 20 Mule Team Borax and General Electric and blah, 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 blah. Don't try to think about it, Carl. Don't try to get your mind around it, because it will drive you nuts.
ready for action. Nip it in the bud, we never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting, not clashing, not at all. But see, my went to do a little acting. Now that's for anyone asking. Give me one to pass them. Drip, drip, drop, there goes an orgasm. Now you coming out the side of your face. We tapping right into your memory bank. Same. So quick as a ticket, let's see your seatbelt passing. Trunk rattling, like two midgets in the back seat wrestling. Speaker box vibrate the tag, make it sound like
10 before the hour.
But I know y'all wanted that 808. Can you feel that VASS, babe? But I know y'all wanted that 808. Can you feel that VASS?
Till is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Till.
Hi, Mike. You know something's wrong, but you're not quite sure what it is. You've been noticing it your whole life, but it's been seeming more and more obvious in recent times. You can't see it or taste it or smell it, but you know it's there. You can feel it. Well, maybe not feel it, but you can feel it with your reason, because you still know that 2 and 2 is 4, not 5. And you know when the Democratic candidate in Wisconsin gets 100,000 less votes than other people who signed a petition, you know that he should have questioned that after the election and said, what's going on? But he didn't. And it happens over and over. It happened in 2000, 2004, and we're starting to wonder about 2008. It happened with Citizens United, where a human concept becomes equal to the human themselves. It's you can't, you know, it's there. I don't know what it is. I probably don't want to know what it is, but there is something.
Well, that's there is something. You're right. I don't know what it is either, Till.
I don't know, but it seems to have a very tight hold on us.
It does. It's like a curse, like it's just karma. We've done an awful lot of unforgivable things in the history of this country, starting with the very foundation of this country, starting with the genocide of the people who were here first.
Right.
So, you know, if anyone wants to believe in religious concepts, just start with some Newton's laws of physics.
Yeah,
you know,
action reaction.
Yeah. Sure, which is I guess that's the law of karma.
Like the ironic curse of Fukushima.
There you go. Yeah, that is that. I mean that one. I can't get that out of my mind. We nuke Japan. Yep. Japan nukes us. So, all right, Till, thank you.
We're fossil fuels, and we become fossils.
Oh, God, I don't like that one. All right, Till, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you. Michelle is calling from L.A. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike. I'm obviously disappointed by the results, you know, but I am happy about the state Senate seat flipping. Hopefully that will stand depending on a recount or whatever happens.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm looking at Talking Points memo, and they have a graph of Scott Walker's job approval. And looking at it, July he was at negative 13 approval, but by the end of November he was at even. So he had 5 months to repair his image. And by January 17th, when they turned in their signatures, he was at plus 5.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his negatives did go up later, but by May 8th, the day after the Democratic primary, he was on the ascendancy again. So that tells me that we need to get out early. We can't wait till, you know, Labor Day or, I mean, at least in terms of November, you know, the Democratic convention. We need action now.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what the acronym EMILY from Emily's List stands for?
I used to, but I don't right now when you asked me, no.
Yeah. It stands for Early Money is Like Yeast.
There you go.
We need a freedom summer like in 1964.
Right.
We need to get out. The NAACP and the ACLU need to pay for whatever sort of fines, if that happens, in Florida or wherever. We need to get out now and do it.
Here's something to consider, Michelle. I don't think the ACLU has any power here at all, and I begin to question the power of organizing along the lines you're talking about. I'll tell you what needs to be done. The Obama Justice Department has got to start swinging the big hammer.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And until the Justice Department takes a look at what this voter suppression and does something about it, I realize the Justice Department, Eric Holder, sent a letter to this Nazi governor of Florida. But sending a letter is one thing. Sending in investigators and federal prosecutors is what it's going to take.
Yeah.
We may be on the verge of another civil war. Who knows? But, you know, the ACLU can only do so much. They have to work their way through the court system. And the court system in this country now, the federal court system, is just chock-a-block with right-wingers.
Yeah.
Thanks to Reagan, the first Bush, Clinton, and the second Bush. They all appointed right-wingers. So what we need is the Justice Department swinging a hammer down on these sons of bitches and letting them know that the law of the land is going to be enforced.
Yeah.
And I just don't see the Obama administration doing that. I just don't.
I am disappointed in Eric Holder. I think he's kind of a weak attorney general.
Yeah, but he gets his orders from the president.
I thought he was independent. I didn't think that.
Well, by that I mean he's part of Obama's cabinet.
Right.
Yeah, he's got to enforce the law. But you can bet your bottom dollar when they sit down together and have dinner someplace, Obama can say to him, hey, listen, what about the situation in Florida?
Yeah.
How about going down there and kicking ass and taking some names for violating the law?
Right.
So, hey, listen, I got to leave there. Michelle, thank you. I appreciate everything you had to say. Thanks a lot. Take care. You know, the laws are on the books for specific reasons, especially the Voting Rights Act and all of its basic parts. And until the Obama administration, what the hell am I saying? I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, Truth Seekers, listen live to The Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 6 p.m. in the West, 9 p.m. in the East, only on the Progressive Voices Network. Watch the live show video stream at MikeMalloy.com. Can't listen live? Download the podcast at MikeMalloy.com. Don't miss a minute of the fun and frivolity.